Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the August 16 edition of Commodity Week. This week, three different branches of USDA delivered friendly market numbers for corn. We'll try to find out what they all mean today as we make our way through Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Our guest on the phone line a bit later in the program, Kevin Van Trump from Raymore, Missouri, and FarmDirection.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our discussion with this question for the week. Corn futures in both the September and December contracts posted outside up weeks. I'm wondering whether you think an 8 cent gain week over week in September and December corn at 10 1/4 higher for the week really is feeling friendly to the marketplace. We'll start with you, Chuck Shelby.
Well, I like it better than being down 8 or 10, so I guess that's a little bit of a moral victory. I think maybe the market had a lot of information coming out this week and maybe ran out of sellers. You know, we'd pressed the downside pretty hard, so that might be as much a factor as anything.
Jackie Vakes?
Well, and I'd have to agree. I think, you know, when you look at the traditional funds being record short in corn, we saw some short covering. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get a big push to the upside.
And after all the reports being positive for prices and the shorts getting out, really didn't go very far. But like Chuck said, it was a lot better up 8 to 10 than down 8 to 10. And dry weather won't finish the crop off like some rain would in the Midwest.
And Pete Manhart, of course, is with Bates Commodities. When USDA released the numbers for the crop production report this week, they said that we would harvest a 13.763 billion bushel corn crop. That's down from the July estimate of 13.95, and that was below the average trade guess of nearly 14 billion. What'd you make of it?
The 2.1 bushel per acre average, I think, shocked the industry, and that helped us really roar. We were only up 10, though, after that report. And then the next day, we dropped 16. So I think the report was kind of disbelief because of an awful lot of good areas of crop. But I think the dry weather forecast helped hold things together.
Yeah, dropped it down to 154.4, as you alluded to, for the average national yield. When you looked at those numbers state by state for average yield, did they surprise you? Because they were pretty similar from the West Corn Belt to the Eastern Corn Belt, Jackie.
No, that was definitely a surprise because we know that the Western Belt is dry, but at the same time, the Western Belt has the advantage of having irrigation. In talking with people out there, they don't agree with the numbers at this stage of the game, but primarily because they're so limited on water this year, and they're very fearful that they just will not have enough water to be able to finish out the crop. That's the thing. But I was surprised to see them as even as they were. I just did not think that was realistic. I expected Ohio and Indiana and us to be higher than what we were.
Yeah, so you expected us to be higher, the Eastern Corn Belt.
Mm-hmm.
Your folks in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota thought they were lower, but neither of them are happy. I guess that's a nice medium somewhere, isn't it?
Well, I think at this point in the game, it's kind of a beauty contest and not so much measuring kernel depth in ears and length and all that. So when you look at the ratings and everything else at this point, especially with kind of a slower maturing crop, we didn't get the normal maybe hard data that we would have in this August report.
September corn this week, by the way, had a top at $4.85. Its bottom was $4.53 3/4 on the week. Settlement price, again, up 8 cents at $4.73 3/4. December contract, $4.63 1/2, up 10 1/4. And I think I will poll all of you. Is there some space in here that you think will be a sell opportunity for farmers, or do we need to wait and see?
Right now, I think we're kind of sideways until we find out more information. A ton of people are doing field things next week that might give us a little more information across the Midwest. But dry weather is making people think the yields won't be as good as maybe we thought they were 2 weeks ago.
Chip Flory and company from Pro Farmer will be in the field next week. They'll be doing their Midwest crop tour. By the way, you can hear that on our willag.org website or just live during the closing market report. We'll have both the eastern and the western leg of the report each day of the week. Jackie?
I do think when you look at corn, if we can get ourselves back up to the 10-week moving average of 495, which coincides with the 40-day moving average of 492, you're looking at a place that if you've done nothing, you should do something, whether you want to do it in puts, however you want to do it. But this crop, whether we like it or not, we can lose 800 million bushels and still be above a billion bushel carryout, according to the numbers.
That near $5 area is kind of a magic number. There are a lot of resistance there. I think that's a point that to be sold there, but remain flexible in how you do it because it's a long ways to go. We don't know those answers. A lot of numbers yet to come.
Yeah, 13.763 billion bushels, still what, the largest corn crop on record if it comes to fruition, if this one is harvested. How much downside potential do you think we have?
I still think you have down to that 420, 410. I think a big thing in the USDA report is the usage and exports. They got us exporting 71% more corn next year, and the rest of the world is selling corn 20 to 30 cents right now cheaper than us, and we'll continue to do that into January.
I think what you really got to look at is it's two-pronged. You got the futures market and the basis, and as we move in closer to harvest here and a little later maturing crop, we're going to see some people scrambling to get some corn to meet their needs at the end of September, early October.
Cash basis tends to be where the market moves, at least at this time of year. And are you getting your farmers ready to make sales on that one?
Absolutely. You know, we're looking not only at old crop. You have to look at some opportunities in new crop, too. If you feel confident you're going to be able to deliver, there's some great basis out there for October-November delivery against a December contract. At the same time, we also know that, and I've heard from Kansas farmers that I work with, if the crop gets up and they're harvesting in the Dallas area, that $1.70, $1.80 over they have right now for old crop is going away. And so I think you have to be very proactive, and you really have to stay on top of the opportunities that are out there.
Chuck, anything we need to do farmers should consider as it relates to their crop insurance?
Well, the lower we go, the more revenue each farmer could collect on his crop insurance. And we've seen problems in years past when we had a revenue claim early before harvest, and in the month of October when they calculate it, that can go away. So we're looking at strategies to lock that in, and basically when you buy the futures at a lower level against your crop insurance, you filed a claim ahead of time.
That's absolutely the truth, Chuck. And you know, that I think that is one of the reasons that people really need to educate themselves as far as using different strategies. You can buy a call and do that type of thing if you don't want to deal with the futures. There are a lot of different ways to approach it, and I just think that you have to farm the program as much as you possibly can, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, the $4.80 and $5 calls are really relatively cheap right now after this big down move that we had, even with being up this week. So I've got a lot of guys just for the crop insurance, and then also as a little frost cap possibility, buying calls to cover part of what they've already sold, especially if you've sold 50, 60, 70% of it, in case we do have a smaller crop and we have a boom in prices.
You talked just a bit earlier about the consumption side of this, so we do have ending stocks numbers that were updated from WASD for both this year and next year. For next year, or the crop that's in the field at the moment, 1.837 billion bushels.
That's down from the July estimate of 1.959, so not quite as big a carryover.
It's 1.8 billion is still a huge wad of carryover, and usage-wise, we have the lowest cattle numbers in how many 50 years. The rest of the world grew more corn, grows more acres, and can sell it 20 to 40 cents cheaper than us. That means you need to protect the downside. If you've already sold half or 80% of your crop, you might look at those calls to protect that insurance.
USDA did raise the average cash price for corn 10 cents on both ends.
They did. There's no question about that. And I think that they're justified in doing that, especially on such a large move down production-wise and even in the ending stocks. But I think what we're suffering from at this point in time is that $7, $8 corn brought in a lot of competition from other countries. And we're going to suffer with that this year. I don't think by 2014 it'll necessarily be as big a deal, because when you look at the ratio for planting beans and corn down in South America, beans are definitely on the favorable side. And so the competition we've experienced has primarily come out of Argentina and Brazil. I believe that that's going to back off, but it's going to haunt us for the rest of this year.
On consumption, how do you see it playing out?
The function of a lower price is to seek out the demand, so that's where the low-end number is going to do its job. And I think it's encouraging, though, that we really, as farmers and producers, we want to supply those end users. We don't want to starve them out so they end up quitting. We want them to build those herds back up, so we're going to have to give something away or have a lower price to make that work.
Well, and you know, if you look at how many days of stocks remain after August 31st, when you looked at last year at this time, we were at 23.4 days left. This year we have 52.9. Does that not say to us that we would necessarily have a lower price just like we have now? Well, when you increase that, and I'm in your camp, Chuck, I wouldn't mind seeing us go down to that 411.5, the 138% retracement, just because it would bring more people back into this market.
A quick word on the FSA numbers that were released midweek. What did everybody make of that, and what does it mean?
Misunderstood numbers. Those are not the final numbers. They're still accumulating information. And in the last 3 years, 1 year after saying we had 2 million of prevent plant, they actually raised the number in the fall, 300,000. So those numbers are, they are not final numbers. If you just look at them and say, oh, we're going to be worse, it's kind of almost like misinformation.
Well, you know, this was one of the reasons FSA never used to publish these numbers, because it's an ongoing process. You know, they have the information. And this year they went and they pushed the reporting date back an entire month, which makes it even worse. But the thing I thought that was interesting on this is basically that some of the southern states that we depend on to bring corn up here, let's say in September, like Mississippi had almost 260,000. Arkansas had 157,000. So it calls into question to me how much corn is really going to be available to us as we head into the next month. But the biggest wild card that we have here is we will not know until they're done what the actual planting intention was. This 97.4 number that that NASS has is a liquid number, too, and it all depends upon what the farmer actually reports.
July wheat this week is 677 and a quarter top for next year, 656 and a half the bottom. Settlement price at $6.16 and a half. It finished 4.5 cents lower. And the September soybeans, $12.96 on the high, the low at 12.17. Settlement price at 12.83 and a quarter. Finished 63 and 3 quarters higher for the week. November soybeans, 12.59 and a quarter, up 77 cents. They blew through the 10, the 20, the 100 day moving averages, but not the 50. Actually, it was a really good week, I think, for soybeans.
Yeah, I think the numbers from the report support the tightness, and it's a very tight line, a very tight number to call. If you drop off another half bushel from 42.5, you go down to 41, you're really tightening the screws down, and with the kind of weather we've got and the lateness of the crop, I think that's the factors there.
What do you do about soybeans? Anything at this time, or are you just hold and wait?
I think producers take advantage with put options and leave the upper end open.
Yep, and I would agree. And if you've got higher put options, I think you should be rolling those put options down to an at-the-money put right now. You know, you look at the $13 is the golden number pretty much at this stage of the game. And I think we can blow through that, but it's going to take a little bit of time. I felt good about the USDA dropping from that crazy 44.5 down to the 42.6. I think that makes a whole lot more sense. And you know, beans are the I guess if you'd have to look at it, if you were a betting person, beans are where you'd be betting because the ending stocks are so tight. We ended up with a 220 million bushel carryout after the USDA dropped usage by 85 million bushels. That would have put us at 135, unprecedented for this time of year, and it would have drove us totally out of our minds.
You know, if we have good weather, then for the next 6 weeks, bean yields will go up. If it stays dry, they're not going to be as good, and the supply is very tight. It's just they could explode if we have anything really severe in the weather factors that's nasty. And I think that's where the move is to the upside. But I still think you have to protect the downside. I've got guys that are half to 60 to 70% sold. They bought $13 calls Monday and are probably doubled their value in this just this week. From last Thursday to this Thursday, beans were up $1.04.
October live cattle at the CME Group this week settled at 127.92 and a half. They were up $1.05 from the previous week on the Friday closes. Feeder cattle at 157.67 and a half were up 20 cents. Lean hogs at 86.72 and a half finished $1.75 higher. Pete Manhart is in studio with us from Bates Commodity. Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities. And when we come back, we'll talk with Kevin Van Trump. He's with Farm Direction.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. The first half of August has been cool and dry. Temperatures are running 3.2 degrees below average. The statewide average rainfall is 0.9 inches, which is about half of our average for the first half of the month. Because of the continued dry weather in northern and central Illinois, the U.S. Drought Monitor has labeled that area abnormally dry. Fortunately, the cooler-than-average temperatures have minimized the stress on crops. The National Weather Service forecasts indicate a return to more August-like weather in the coming week. Daytime temperatures over the weekend are expected to be in the 79 to 81 degree range across the state on Saturday and about 82 to 83 degrees on Sunday across the state. Overnight lows will be in the mid-50s. Next week will be hotter and more humid with highs climbing into the mid to upper 80s and lows in the mid-60s. There is no chance of significant rain during this time. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecasts show a continuation of warmer temperatures and a better chance of rain. The new outlook for September shows Illinois with an increased chance of above average rainfall, as well as in the September, October, November time frame. If that comes to pass, it could present some challenges for the upcoming harvest this fall. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the August 16 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Chuck Shelby and Jackie Vakes and Pete Manhart. On the phone line from Raymore, Missouri, is Kevin Van Trump. He is with FarmDirection.com and the Van Trump Report. Kevin, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Well, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me about how you viewed USDA's reports earlier in the week to begin with.
Well, I think it was pretty much a consensus across a lot of the bigger traders, or at least some of the fun guys. The year weights were in question. They used the five-year average. You know, with three drought years in there, the question was, you know, the 32 should be more around 34 pounds per bushel. And some guys are continuing to talk that the 154.4 number is probably more in the 158 to 160 range. So, you know, I think amongst the, I guess, some of the bigger, larger traders, that's really where we sit with the corn type of story. They continue to lean on the bearish side. From the bean perspective, I think, like Jackie said, it's kind of the best bet on the board here right now for most folks. They think it's got the biggest bang for the buck, and everyone's a little bit scared. They're scared of the dry conditions. They're scared of the early freeze talk. You know, China's continuing to buy here. We're seeing China with some big numbers, and talks on the inside are that they're pretty upset with the Brazilian logistical problems and constraints, and they're going to continue to buy U.S. beans, at least through probably through Jan or Feb time period. You move any further out from that, and we're just not competitive. So, you know, I think it was mixed. I think, like you said, the USDA threw out what they threw out, and I think everyone now thinks that we're going to work higher into corn, and beans is still an unknown.
So what's the most important factor that's going to drive this market in the next 30 days?
Next 30 days, I think you're obviously the weather. I mean, in our opinion, there's no question. No one can get their hands around the early frost and what type of damage it's going to do. Most of the folks, like I said, on the managed money side are thinking you're going to have 5 to 10% of the corn that's still going to be exposed. You're going to probably have somewhere to 10 to 20% on the beans that could see some type of yield damage if and when and where this frost does occur. Now, most of the weather people, and heck, we've been on several, like, think tank discussions with, I can't tell you, there would have been a number of weather guys. And I think their talk is anywhere from, I'd say, 75 to 90% chance that there is going to be some type of early frost or freeze. And, you know, where and like I said, when is the big question.
Well, Kevin, let me ask you this. All right, everybody's hopped up on frost. Are they talking about dryness and the impact that dryness has on finishing out this crop?
They are. They are to some extent. I don't think people are as concerned on that side of it about the dry conditions. It seems like the weather, you know, we had some rains that were forecast in and then they were taken back out, and now everyone's kind of watching to see what happens here over the weekend and moving into this. You know, we're going to warm up and then move back to a little cooler temps, and the really unknown on the rain has most of the folks. Like I think you said earlier in the show, Jackie, out west, we know it's dry, but a lot of irrigated ground, a lot of our people that we're talking to out west are talking big, big yields on some of the irrigated crops. So it doesn't seem like there's that much fear about the dryness as there is that the early frost could really do some damage to the bean crop. So,
what are you doing for customers right now in the corn or the beans to protect or take advantage of?
You know, Pete, like you said, a lot of our guys in beans, most of our folks are about 70% sold, 60 to 70 in new crop, and we're about 40% sold in 14 on beans. So we're pretty heavy sellers. We're just fearful as we move forward into the fourth quarter of 13. And what we're seeing, I'm partners in a few farms over in Brazil, and I think like Jackie said, they're not going to plant more corn. The corn's below the cost of production right now in many parts of Brazil, and they are going to up the ante on this bean thing. There's no question. We started to hear more reports. Our guys were saying maybe 10, 15, maybe even upwards of 20 cargoes of beans were sold to China out of Brazil again this week. The real is trading at the lowest levels trading over 3 years compared to the dollar. So what's happening is it's just encouraging more and more buying from Brazil. And obviously the logistical constraints are a problem. So we've tried to get sold earlier this year, Pete, in the beans than we have now. Some guys got a little nervous, like you said, and they came back this week. And what we did is we bought some $13 calls, I think probably same time you did, maybe Monday. And some guys were out there selling $15 calls and $14 to finance it, just saying, you know, hey, we're good if we sell $15 beans and $14. So that was kind of the play there. I think there could be a jump. I mean, I think there could be a jump to the upside in these beans. So.
But you say there could be a jump to the upside, but in the same breath you tell us that they're going to go full bore in Brazil. Will that cap it? And more importantly, I want to know how soon they're going to go full bore. Because if they go full bore really fast, then they're looking at a second crop corn. If at some point those numbers change, isn't that right?
Well, in the areas where you know where you get down to the south or in those parts, I don't think you're going to have as much second crop corn. Everyone's talking that they're going to go with full season beans instead of full season corn, and it should be a pretty substantial shift. Todd, I don't think it's going to happen like immediately, but I'm telling you that I would keep a finger on the trigger, so to speak, here. If we get a good weather pop in the next 30 days, I think these beans could make a substantial run just because that's where everyone wants to kind of push their money and they want to continue to play that side of it. So that's where I'd be more aggressive and make more aggressive sales up front. Whereas we turn the corner, I think, and you get past harvest, I think it's going to be a little bit tougher to see some traction against what takes place in Brazil. So,
if the bean market takes off, will it drag the corn along?
Seems like corn's just been the whipping post. You know, we made some moves where we, you know, when that ratio got out, traditionally the corn-bean ratio, you know, 2.4 to 1, and most guys will say if it's corn's at 450, beans should be around 1080, somewhere in that ballpark. And, you know, we got way out there this week. We went out and tried to, you know, get cute and buy corn against the beans, and you know we've taken it on the chin, so to speak. And I'm afraid the darn thing could continue to push and push. So I'm not real sold on the fact that corn's going to be able to keep up with beans. It seems like most of the fund guys that I'm talking to, they're kind of creatures of habit, and they seem to want to do what they've been doing best, and it seems like selling most of these rallies in the corn market. So, we're going to stick with it, but I think it's going to be a long, long play. So I have a hard time believing that these beans are going to pull the corn up too much.
Kevin, I've heard that Brazil maybe, because of the size of the crop this year, may actually be shipping all the way out until January. How much of an impact do you think that would have as far as holding our bean price down, knowing that we can't sell against them?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big concern, and that's kind of our worries as we move forward. Obviously, the USDA estimate at 69 million metric tons for China has a lot of the bigger players in the industry second-guessing the USDA. They think they padded that number just so they've got some room to work on things as we move forward. I'm partners with a few pretty high-ups. One CEO of Bungie, and we were on the phone, and he's saying that China's going to continue to buy from the U.S., though, just because they're so upset with the way things have gone on the flow out of Brazil. But they're just not sure if it's going to continue much past that DSJAN time frame. And like you said, once we move into that, and if Brazil can get some of the logistical wrinkles ironed out, we're really going to struggle, we think, moving forward, and they're going to be swimming in beans. So, the question is, I think you got to be fairly aggressive early and make sure you keep your eye on what happens in Brazil as far as the weather concerns early on, and everything looks pretty smooth right now.
They have, a record almost corn crop, the second crop that will be being sold here clear into February, don't they, in Brazil?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's got us scared. I mean, you got Ukraine at 60 cents cheaper a bushel right here today, and Brazil's 25 cents cheaper a bushel. And like I said, with the real falling against the dollar, we're hearing more and more purchases coming that way. Now, one saving grace kind of is the fact that they're continuing to try and kick these beans out, and the corn really hasn't taken precedence in the lineups. There's pretty good lineups, but I think we're still okay on that front. But that's the thing we're saying. A lot of guys were getting excited here, the bulls, about these export sales numbers the last few weeks. And I agree, they've been strong and they've been good, but we just don't think they can keep pace as we move forward here.
On the corn-soybean ratio, some work out of the University of Illinois suggests that because the RFS will push vegetable diesel fuel or soybean diesel in 2014, that it might very well manage to push bean prices long enough that it would pull corn with it to some extent. You think that's good work or not?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. That's what Jack, you guys were asking. I'm not really sure that corn's going to keep up right here in the short term. Now, if you talk longer term, I think corn, I think, has been the whipping post of this whole thing for the last 3 months, and everyone's wanted to be short corn against anything and everything. And I honestly think that's going to change. I just saw the Merck, cut margins today for specs by 25%. So I think corn could be a little bit of a surprise and be a rebounder as we move forward later on. One thing I would point out to you guys is that I was talking with a lot of ethanol CEOs, and I mean, these margins have been really, really good as of late. And if this crude can stay up there, there may be a surprise on the ethanol side. You could see ethanol, pick up 400, 500 million bushels on the demand side, I think, and everybody's looking the other way, not thinking that that's going to happen. So I think there could be some surprises in corn longer term.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Kevin Van Tromp is with Farm Direction out of Raymore, Missouri. A final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Pete Manhart.
Just be aware of possible bounces and be ready to protect and or deliver some cash.
Jackie Bakes.
Be safe as we head toward this harvest time. That's always something we have to be concerned about.
And Chuck Shelby.
We're still in a weather market for the next probably month minimally, and it's pretty important for the next marketing and pricing.
Chuck Shelby, of course, is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Jackie Vakes from Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, joining us on this August 16 edition of Commodity Week. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. And you'll find updates from the Pro Farmer Crop Tour there next week. In the closing market report, you can listen to the program not long after it airs on our radio stations. It's posted by about 3 p.m. Central Time. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.